1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me.
Jones, and this is Hank Rings, my shorter version of Hank Jones Polysports, where I usually focus on one or two issues. Today I am focusing on two. First one is the recently passed, as of yesterday, I guess, House bill that suspends the debt ceiling. Now, we were projected to run out of money, so to speak, not be able to pay our bills as of this coming Monday, June 5th. Whatever the hell that means. I mean, given that we've been printing it since the pandemic, I'm not sure how they come up with this, how we're going to do this. But here's what they did. Now, normally, and this is how money is created in the United States of America. Congress approves an increase in the national debt. In other words, the U.S. is saying, hey, we can go into more debt because we voted on it. So we vote to increase the debt ceiling, per se. Prove an increase in the national debt. Technically speaking, then, we go to the Federal Reserve, who somehow loans us the money, which is then funded through the purchase of U.S. government securities, T-bills, T-notes, etc., that are traded on the open market. Now, oftentimes, institutional buyers will buy it up. Oftentimes, countries will buy it up. Foreign companies, whatever, whomever. So in and of itself, we're just saying, we don't have it, we'll just print it. That's what we're doing. Now, what we count on, of course, is being bought up. Here's what they say. We would have lost our credit rating had we defaulted. Knowing that, who's buying up the debt at that point? Doesn't that make you wonder right off there? I mean, You know, Duck's in the chat room right now. If I say to Duck, hey, Duck, I need money. I'm going to increase my debt limit. If I don't, I'm bankrupt and I can't pay any money to anyone that I owe. Why would Duck then buy up my debt instrument? Now, it's the quote-unquote full faith and credit of the United States and the confidence in the United States government. That confidence has got to be shattered. Probably should have been shattered back 50 years ago. But that being the case. So it passed 314 to 117, 149 Republicans, 165 Democrats. Now, one article says, in a potentially worrisome sign for the House Republican Speaker Kevin McCarthy, 71 members of his conference opposed the deal that he brokered with President Joe Biden. Then it says, taking a victory lap after the bill's passage, McCarthy downplayed concerns over divisions within the House Republican conference and celebrated the policy concessions he secured in his negotiations. He says, I've been thinking about this day before my vote for Speaker because I knew the debt ceiling was coming, and I wanted to make history. I wanted to do something no other Congress has done. Tonight, we all made history. Really? How about infamy? Wouldn't that be a better term? We made infamy. The fact that Dopey Joe applauded it. The fact that Secretary of Treasury Janet Yellen said we will be unable to pay bills starting June 5th unless it was allowed to borrow more. So we're not really paying bills. We're just borrowing more money, borrowing from Peter to pay Paul, so to speak. They say it's a bipartisan compromise. Neither side got everything it wanted. Dopey Joe said the only path forward was a bipartisan compromise. It suspends our borrowing limit until 2025, January 2025. In other words, if President Trump is elected again, he deals with it. If Ron DeSantis is elected, he deals with it. If Dopey Joe is elected, of course, we know it was a sham election again. It suspends our borrowing limit until January 2025, which, quote unquote, ensures the issue will not resurface before the next presidential election. Now it says McCarthy successfully pushed for government spending cuts and changes to the work requirements for SNAP, that Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. However, members of the Freedom Caucus say it didn't go far enough. Of course, on the other side, they say it went too far. Our nation's debt is now more than $31 trillion. So here's what we have to do. One, we have to contact our representatives. Simple as that. Contact our representatives, your representative. Now, Hakeem Jeffries said the House Freedom Caucus trying to suspend it. They opposed a procedural motion prior to the final vote. 29 Republicans voted against it, that motion. So 52 Democrats had to vote for the motion, setting up the final vote. House Democrat leader Hakeem Jeffries said McCarthy lost control of the floor. He says it's an extraordinary act that indicates just the nature of extremism that is out of control on the other side of the aisle. In other words, he says, and then he says extreme MAGA Republicans attempted to take control of the House floor. Democrats took it back for the American people. No, they didn't. They took it back for the Democrats. So why did Hakeem Jeffries support the debt ceiling bill? Of course, because any cuts are bad for him. But to total stoppage of debt or of payment is even worse. It says they lamented the spending cuts in the bill, but noted the crucial importance of avoiding a default. Here's Nancy Pelosi's take. Our Constitution makes perfectly clear the validity of the public debt of the United States shall not be questioned. While she finds this legislation objectionable, it will avert an unprecedented default, which would bring devastation. So why does it bring devastation to America's families? How do they even pull that crap in? Well, what does it tell you? It tells you how many people, how many of America's families sit on their ass with their hand out every month for their government check, their government direct deposit, their government debit card. This is repulsive. Repulsive. Now, you know what the Congressional Progressive Caucus said? Republicans never cared about reducing the deficit, only about forcing through their anti-working family policy priorities under the threat of a catastrophic default. Argue in part, or I would agree in part, about never caring about the deficit. Neither side cares about that. The mechanism by which we increase it, or the mechanism by which we default in and of itself, is a joke. But yet, here we are. So, yeah, contact your representatives. Contact your senators. And I'm not even sure we want, at this point, for the bill to get held up. I prefer we don't default, of course. But that's just on a world stage, in a sense. And in a sense, to people that own the debt. There are a lot of Americans that have investments in that debt. But so, let's turn to the banks. Now, there have been three high-profile, I don't say that, there have been a couple high-profile bank failures, or bank seizures, I should say. Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank. Now, in both cases, Dopey Joe said, shareholders aren't going to be the ones getting their money back, the depositors. Anybody find fault with this? Or everybody think it's wonderful? Everybody understand? Shareholders often put up money to fund bank projects. Banks have stock, which in and of itself is kind of crazy. But to say shareholders won't be taken care of, but depositors will. 9 times out of 10, shareholders are depositors. Shareholders are depositors. Why would you own a piece of a bank and not put any money in it? And people say, oh, because I know it's going to run into it. Nobody invests hoping something gets run into the ground. Even when people sell stocks, you know, short sell stocks, they're not hoping, they're betting that the value is going to go down, and they hope for it to some degree, but they don't want companies to fail. Well, some people do. I mean, leftists and progressives do, but I mean, the average investor doesn't want that. So here we're saying, shareholders aren't going to be taken care of. You know, I talked about this yesterday. The bill, clawback, it's called clawback payments. As if these people are writing themselves checks and then hiding it. How idiotic is that belief? People that believe that are morons. Of course, the Senate is going to take this up. There are some progressives, including Bernie Sanders. They plan to oppose the debt ceiling proposal. Chuckie Schumer says he pledges to swiftly take it up. bitch McConnell's going to support it. So, yeah, they're going to support this suspension of the debt ceiling. In other words, it's not going to be taken up. We're just going to keep borrowing. There's no limit. So why do we have that limit, I guess, would be one. You know, my brother, Brother Tommy, has been on this show. He hasn't been in a while, but you know, he said before, he voted for Trump in 2016 and in 2020, but he said, you know, if anyone's going to blow up the system, it's going to be Trump. And he said, on the left, if I were a Democrat, I'd vote for Bernie Sanders, not because I think he's competent, but because he will blow everything up. And that may be what this country needs. We need it, but we need it without affecting our most vulnerable. We need it without affecting a ton of people, so to speak, obviously. But so the banks. So the most recent, of course, was First Republic Bank, Silicon Valley, and then Signature, they failed. But on May 1st, so a month ago, the FDIC announced that the bank had been closed and sold to JP Morgan Chase. So a little history. First Republic was founded in February of 1985. Did their first public offering in 1986, sold at $10 a share. They started expanding their offerings in 1996. Made several other acquisitions over the years. And they were acquired by Merrill Lynch in 2007 for $1.8 billion in cash and stock. Merrill Lynch was owned by Bank of America. It was acquired by Bank of America. They sold it to a group of private investors, including the former chairman, James Herbert. Sold it for approximately $1 billion. Made more acquisitions in 2012, in 2015, in 2016. 2018, they invested in a student loan financier called Common Bond. In 2019, 50 client advisors, part of First Republic's Luminous acquisition, $17 billion of assets under management, left the company. Huh. Isn't that weird? So they owed a student loan financier. Guess what happened? Student loans were suspended. Debt ceiling, negotiation, student loan payments return in September. So if you're one of those that thinks it's cool that you're not paying on your student loan, you're going to start paying on it. So in March, First Republic was downgraded by Fitch and S&P's global ranking systems, citing a high proportion of uninsured deposits from wealthy customers who are more likely to move their money elsewhere, and a loan-to-deposit ratio of 111%, meaning that it had lent out more money than it had in deposits. Now, said to alleviate concerns of a possible bank run, 11 banks, including JP Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Citigroup, and Truist, deposited $30 billion with First Republic, despite that share's decline. $30 billion. Remember I said it was $10-plus billion? $30 billion. That was on March 16th. On March 19th, S&P downgraded the bank's credit rating 3 grades, saying it may not solve the substantial business, liquidity, funding, and profitability challenges that we believe the bank is now facing. They say on that day the bank's capital shortfall was $13.5 billion. In their first quarterly release, earnings release, since the crisis, they noted customers withdrew $104.5 billion, but that outflows had stabilized in April. So it said the significance of those outflows was explained by the number of high net worth clients whose assets exceeding $250,000 would not have been protected by the FDIC. First Republic noted it was weighing strategic options, aiming to reduce the size of its balance sheet. Since the majority of the bank's long-term assets were in municipal bonds, the bank was unable to make full use of the Bank Term Funding Program, which is an emergency program instated after the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank. Those assets did not qualify as eligible collateral. On April the 28th, the bank announced plans to begin selling bonds and securities at a loss to raise equity and to also begin laying off people. Multiple advisor teams also began to leave the bank. On that day, it was announced that the FDIC was considering seizing the bank, causing its stock price to plunge another 43% to $3.50. After it fell another 42% in after-hours trading, DIC confirmed its imminent takeover. The next day, they approached various banks, including JP Morgan Chase, PNC, and Bank of America, saying they had until April 30th to place bids for First Republic. On May 1st, the FDIC announced First Republic had been closed by the California Department of Financial Protection and Innovation and its assets seized by the FDIC. JP Morgan Chase eventually won the auction, paying the FDIC $10.6 billion for nearly all of First Republic's assets. Does this make sense to anyone? Several banks, a month plus before, a month and a half before, deposited $30 billion. Now, if you remember me talking about this, they were required as uninsured deposits to be in the bank for 120 days. On March 19th, I mean, immediately after that money comes in, on March 19th, they get downgraded. These are public announcements, by the way. They openly talk about the capital shortfall. They compare it to Silicon Valley Bank. After noting how much customers withdrew, they at least said that the outflows had stabilized. And yet somehow, a month and a half later, the feds seized First Republic. Now, here's the weird part. J.P. Morgan ends up paying another $10.6 billion for First Republic's assets. What assets? They had a shortfall, capital shortfall of $13.5 billion. What did they buy? So they bought the majority of the bank's long-term assets were municipal bonds. So Chase bought bonds? Municipal bonds that didn't qualify for collateral? Why would Chase have bought them? Would you buy something that isn't really usable as collateral that essentially has no long-term or no short-term value? Pay $10.6 billion? Something doesn't match up here. Why was the stock plunging? And if it had plunged thus so far, why did Chase still pay $10.6 billion? Well, total assets in 2022 were listed at $212.6 billion. Total assets of $212.6 billion. Equity of $17.45 billion. In other words, of total assets of $212.6 billion, they were leveraged for all but $17.45 billion. JPMorgan Chase was able to buy it for $10.6 billion. Think about that. Think of it that way. JPMorgan Chase won a bidding war of $212 billion of assets for $10.6 billion. Again, I harken back to Resolution Trust in the late 80s and early 90s. Resolution Trust was going in and seizing thrift institutions. In other words, not banks, but savings and loans and other thrift organizations. They weren't national banks. They performed similar functions, but they weren't technically banks. We'll call Washington Mutual being a very famous one of those. A thrift institution. Washington Mutual, by the way, got taken over by Chase. Resolution Trust seized banks, seized assets, including land that they'd either taken back or owned, or defaulted, had been defaulted on. And they were taking land that was worth, say, had a market value of, say, $5 million, and they were selling it for 10% of the dollar. They were selling it for $500,000, $500,000. And they were doing that all over the country with seized assets. And their response to Congress, Bill McCollum, my congressman and a friend of mine, my former congressman and a good friend of mine, said, asked them one time, why are you doing this? Notice that this is happening. And they went into this long song and dance, and I asked Bill later, Bill, it didn't look, at least from the C-SPAN perspective, it didn't look like they answered your question. He goes, it looked like that because they didn't answer my question. He goes, oh, you have to be careful how far you go with that question. But, you know, they didn't answer it. So let's see along the way. Like I said, let's follow some money trails. What does Jamie Dimon come out of this with? Who else, what assets do they sell off? And to whom? And at what sort of discount? Because these banks put in $30 billion. 11 banks put in $30 billion. So let's quickly get out the calculator on the phone and calculate that. 30 billion, 30 billion, 300 billion, 3 billion, 30 billion, and let's divide that by 11. So on average, the banks put in $2,727,000, blah, 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 Repetan and all that. So a little under $3 billion each on average. But some I know were higher. It would be interesting to know how much Chase put in. It would be interesting to know if Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Citigroup, or Truist are going to get any of those deposits back. I mean, did Jamie Dimon pull a fast one, or did the feds pull a fast one? Again, I've talked about it before. Write your representatives. Write your senators. Write to them. What happened with First Republic? $30 billion in deposits, and a month and a half later, they're taken over for $10.6 billion by one of the banks that made those deposits. How does this happen? How is it allowed that one of the companies that put their money in was allowed to take it back over? Why was there a bidding war? Why didn't that just get divided up amongst those 11 banks? I'll tell you what bothers me about it personally. One of those banks I happen to bank with. My wife and I happen to bank with it. Not Bank of America. Hell no. Not Wells Fargo. Hell no. But it doesn't matter. But we bank with one of those banks, one of those 11 banks. So did my bank lose $2 plus billion on this deal? Did your bank lose $2+ billion on this deal? Before you say, I don't bank with one of those, or I don't bank, or whatever, you're going to pay for it somewhere. But how is a bank that stepped in to help bail out that they win the auction? Now, maybe the others just simply said, hell no, we'll take our losses. If they're totally flush with cash, it's a write-down, certainly. Not a good one, but it is a write-down on your other tax return. But these are all public institutions, publicly traded institutions, I should say. So let's write our Congress people and our senators and ask them, what is the point of a debt ceiling if we're voting to suspend it till after a presidential election? How did you vote? Why did you vote that way? Are you trying to help one side or the other? How does it benefit the average family? And then ask them, under the banks, folks, Senator X and O, Congressman Y and O, why does a bank, $1 billion, get seized and basically sell for $10.6 billion? How does that happen? Why was there information going out in the news that had this effect? Why was that happening? It's simple as that. We need to know, why did this happen? Why have these two things happened? Now, to say that they're mutually exclusive isn't honest, but you're right. They're not directly related. But they are, because the government is going to have to bail out statutorily protected depositors. Either that or J.P. Morgan Chase just takes over those accounts. So J.P. Morgan is going to close 21 First Republic branches. They will shut 21 branches by the end of the year as they integrate the failed lender into its operations. About a quarter of First Republic's 84 branches across 8 states. First Republic, which is the largest to collapse since the 2008 financial crisis, they were the 14th largest bank, was seized by regulators and sold to J.P. Morgan. These locations have relatively low transaction volumes and are generally within a short drive from another First Republic office. Now, 100 employees who are affected will be offered 6-month transition assignments. After that, they will be eligible to apply for other roles at J.P. Morgan, which currently has 13,000 vacancies. Wow. Yeah, J.P. Morgan is the largest U.S. lender, almost 300,000 employees, 4,800 branches. Plans to invest in opening more locations and expanding its digital offerings. So, what's going to happen here? Obviously, they're closing some branches. Sounds like they've just absorbed it for $10.6 billion, or depending on how you look at it, for $13.6 billion. And maybe those banks that have that money invested keep those deposits. Those deposits, you know, J.P. Morgan has taken it over. They haven't closed it out. So something's up there. Something not good. The fact J.P. Morgan was able to come in and take it for $10.6 billion after 11 banks had just invested $30 billion. Was there, you know, did Jamie Dimon collude? You know, we're hearing this word collusion. Was there collusion between J.P. Morgan Chase and the FDIC? Were these other banks left out in the cold, or were they part of the collusion? Be interesting to know. So ask your congressman or your senator those questions. Why did this happen the way it did? Why, after this seemingly good move by 11 banks to shore it up, why did it still continue to fail? Why wasn't there more support? Why did the bank that was the ringleader suddenly get in there to take it over? Appears to be a loss leader, considering it said they acquired it for all its assets for $10.6 billion, when at the end of 2022, they were listed as $212 billion. Why the fire sale? And who's going to end up taking care of that shortfall? So that's our assignment, folks. Write your congressman, write your senator, ask them point of a debt ceiling if we're just going to suspend it. Suspending it meaning what? Does this just mean we just borrow umpteen amounts so that we don't even have a ticker measuring our national – are we just going to let our national debt just continue and continue and continue until January of 2025? Is that what we're doing? Now, here's something interesting. There are only two countries, United States and Denmark, this type of system where we actually place debt ceiling. Other countries don't do it. They get money the same way. They basically go to their central bank, if you will, their central authority, and get more money, issue more. But they don't have a limit. They don't have to approve an increase in the debt ceiling. I would also venture to guess that those other countries don't run deficits like our government does. Now, you know, you can make those arguments. Well, you know, we owe it to ourselves. You know, 70% of it's owned by Americans and all. That's fine on the surface. But why are we running this kind of deficit spending, and why do we continue to increase it, our national debt? Now, there are two different things. National debt is our accumulated debt. Deficit spending is our annual budget. Guess what? We're all required to live under our own budget. I am. Duck Northwest Media is. Vito is. Al is. Everybody we know is. Can't just suddenly say, I'm increasing my debt and I'm letting it fly. Here's more money. You can't do that. You can't create more money yourself on your own like that. Not by the stroke of a pen or the clacking of a keyboard. This is messed up. And so we've got to find out. So let's do it. Let's write our congressmen. Let's write our senators. Let's report back. I'll report back what I find out. I'll ask others to do the same. Let's find out. Let's call in over the next month. Let's find out what the hell is happening and why it's happening the way it is. But the short answer, greed and corruption, that's fine. But what's happened? Why is it happening the way it's happening? Because theoretically, it doesn't make sense. But you know, that's on the surface. Like, that doesn't sound right. But, you know, in total, in sum, it looks really gross, and it looks really, really suspicious. It absolutely does. Got a caller here. You're on Hank Greens. What's your name?
Hi, yes. My name's Matthew E. O'Neill. I'm an Amazon.com author in 13 different countries. I recently wrote the book Everopedia Boxing Archives. It was released last month on Amazon.
Okay.
And the reason for the call is I'm also, I'm a registered Republican, and I've voted Republican since 2012. I voted in every single election.
Okay.
And I'm just calling to say that I think the Republican Party is better set up than the Democratic Party. From all the research that I've done, it's a better political party because they field more qualified candidates that have education and professional backgrounds. When I checked out the Democratic Party and some of the people they fielded as candidates, they had zero education and a poor professional work experience background. So I just wanted to say to the listeners that I think the Republican Party is better.
Well, I appreciate that. I wish I could say I wholeheartedly agree. I think there are better people within the Republican Party, but as a party, I think both of them are quite lacking. But what are your thoughts on this debt ceiling? First of all, what are your thoughts on that? Do you have any thoughts? Is it am I crazy, or are we absolutely just spending ourselves into oblivion?
Yeah, it looks like they're spending too much money, but I think I have faith in the president. I believe he'll be able to fix the problem, and I still have faith in him and the politicians. I think that
you have
when
faith
they
in
lost,
Joe Biden. You have faith in Joe Biden.
Well, he's a smart person. I mean, we always hope for the best. I think what happened was America lost the war in Afghanistan, and then of course the global coronavirus pandemic happened. So when they combine those two things, I think those factors have led to the debt ceiling problem. So it's not necessarily anybody's fault, but I think those two issues have helped create the massive debt that we have. You know, I don't think people foresaw America losing to Afghanistan, or anybody foresaw the global coronavirus pandemic happening. And I think that's part of the issue.
Okay, so you have faith in our president to fix it. You think the Republican Party is better, more qualified, but you have faith in our president to solve this?
Well, I mean, the Democrats, they still field some good candidates, you know. But generally speaking, I think the Republicans have better political candidates because they have a better organized party. When I was researching some of the Democratic candidates, like, for example, Thomas Menino, who was the mayor of Boston for 20 years. And I lived in the interior of Boston back in 2013. And the neighborhood that I lived in and some of the neighborhoods there are worse than third world countries. So a lot of people don't want to talk about that. I know that Thomas Menino died back in 2014, so I don't want to say anything bad about a dead person, but just to think that he would be the mayor of the city for so long, he was there for over 20 years. And I don't believe he ever graduated from high school or even had professional jobs, which comes first. So I think that they don't want to talk about that on television, but the whole Thomas Menino situation really irritated me. And I just think that it's wrong that they would field candidates like him.
Well, you know, they've done that across the board, though. We have candidates literally who aren't qualified to, who've never run businesses, who have never, I mean, you're literally letting people who have never, you know, they talk about skin in the game for these banks or for the debt ceiling. They say, oh, we want people to have skin in the game. Well, guess what? Most of the Democrats don't have skin in the game, including Joe Biden. Joe Biden's never run anything. Joe Biden has never managed a business. He's never, I mean, he's a criminal. He's a crook. So, I mean, I just don't understand how
he was 30 years old.
He what?
He was elected when he was 30 years old. So he's been a politician for about 50 consecutive years. So he has tremendous experience as a politician.
Yeah.
But
experience is, I mean, to what end? What has he done that has helped this country? He's done nothing. He's literally made us, no longer are we energy independent. No longer can we, I mean, no longer are companies willing to invest in things that, you know, in energy. Because why? Because they know that the current administration has no sympathy there. So, yeah, I mean, I just don't know how you can say you have faith in our president to fix the debt ceiling. And it just, that blows me away. But
we always hope for the best. Another point I'd like to talk about quickly is last month, many of the Oath Keepers went to prison for the Capitol riots on January 6, 2021. There was an insurgency at the Capitol. And last month, many of the Capitol rioters went to prison, which was, you know, I think five or six of them went to prison, including two Army veterans. So I wanted to bring that up. They went to prison for what they did that month. I mean, and I believe there's still a lot more people that are going to be prosecuted and be going to prison for what happened that day. So that's something that I find kind of interesting. They still have a lot of work to do. But again, if you commit crimes, you're probably going to prison. I think that's how that kind of works.
Well, yeah, but again, we haven't even figured out a lot of them what crime they've committed. We literally have, in some cases, people that didn't even the guy, the QAnon shaman or whatever. Turns out he wasn't doing anything. He was being led around. He was being chauffeured around and given a tour. And that guy was in prison. So yeah, something's really wrong there with the whole setup. I mean, I suspect, like many, that this was a setup from the beginning by certain people within our government.
Yeah, I don't think they thought that it was going to happen like that. I think they probably thought they were going to protest something.
Those people knew exactly, Pelosi, et cetera, they knew exactly what was going to happen. Don't kid yourself. They knew exactly what was going to happen. That's why they didn't ask for any subsequent security there. They didn't ask for security because they wanted it to happen. They orchestrated it to happen. Don't kid yourself. These aren't choir boys. These aren't people with good experience or positive experience. These are corrupt people that are literally taking your country and my country and running it into the ground. But in the end, they're the ones that are going to come out of it with any problems, because they hold the dollars, they hold the purse strings, they hold the power. So yeah, think about that. Well, thanks for the call, Thomas, and Thomas O'Neill, and your book is on Amazon. What's it called again?
Yeah, my name is Matthew O'Neill. It's O'Neill. I released Everipedia Boxing Archives, the collection of boxing archives. The book details professional boxing.
Oh, okay. Well, awesome. We'll look for it, and maybe we'll have you back on to talk about the book. That would be a great thing. So have a great day, sir.
Thanks.
Okay. A good call from Matthew O'Neill. I'm a little concerned when he says he has faith in our president on the debt ceiling. And, you know, thinking about the war in Afghanistan is not what led to our national debt. But I see his point. Yeah, we spent a lot of money on those wars. And who thought that we were going to walk away from it the way we did and let it happen the way we did? He certainly makes some awesome points there, but I'd love to have him back on because, you know, as a show that also talks about sports, it would be cool just because boxing has been sort of flying under the radar for a while, but now we're starting to get these exhibitions, you know, and people like Floyd Mayweather that are retired from, you know, active competition but are still doing these expeditions. That's kind of cool. It would be interesting to hear his take on some of the fights that historically that have happened over the years. Okay, folks, pretty much up at the end of it. I want to thank Duck for being here, and I want to thank Matthew O'Neill for his call. Check out his book, Matthew O'Neill on Everipedia Boxing Stories. He says it's on Amazon. But in the meantime, remember our assignment. We are going to write or contact our congressmen and senators, and we're going to ask them, how did this bank deal, this First Republic deal, happen with these banks investing and J.P. Morgan then taking it over for $10.6 billion when it had assets at the end of 2022 of $212 billion? And we're going to ask, without a debt ceiling, what are we even doing? Why don't we just suspend the budget, for instance? What the hell? If we're suspending the debt ceiling, is there a point in even, you know, literally, I mean, is there a point in tracking our expenses and what costs what? You know, it boggles the mind that they would just, quote unquote, suspend the debt ceiling. In the meantime, I'll be back next Wednesday at 6 o'clock with Hank Jones, Poly Sports. Give a listen for Veto tomorrow. I know it's Taking Back Our Republic or something, but it's a good show. Conservative Casual Friday tomorrow at noon. Give Veto a listen. Minister Osama Dakduk and the Beautiful Christian Saturday night at 10 p.m. till 12 midnight with Revealing the Truth About Islam. Eric in on Sundays at 3 with the Cross and Crescent discussion. Then Veto and Al are back on Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern with the Veto Esposito Show featuring Big Al. Other shows, Andy's on tomorrow with Southern Sense Radio after Veto. She comes in at 1. Joseph Gibson, I think on Tuesday nights. Maybe other nights as well. Chief with The Simple Things in Life. Tim Tapp with Tap Into Truth. Sally with American Statesman on Monday nights. I think she goes at 7 because I think she overlaps with Veto, but she's got some good stuff. And Sally is not a partisan. She's a conservative, but she is not a partisan. She will say freely she's not, quote unquote, a registered Republican. And I happen to be, but that doesn't mean I don't even always vote for Republican candidates. So, meantime, folks, have a great weekend. Great rest of your week, of course. And be safe out there this weekend. It is the 1st of June. We are into the 6th month of our new year. Yeah, it's flying. All get out. Have a good one, folks. I will send you off with a nice little, well, you know what? We're not. Let's bag the tunes. We don't need tunes here. We're just gonna head on out. No, you know what? Why not? Why not a tune? It's a good show. It's a good song by a guy named Leon Huff called, no, you know what? We'll go a little further. We'll go down to some Gino Vannelli. How about some Gino Vannelli? Good song called Jack Miraculous. Let me find it first. Huh. Something's messed up with our... Here we go. Send you out with this, folks. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your week. Have a good weekend. Be safe.
My, what a marvelous time. Wear your pants and leather shoes. You gotta win and never lose. Oh, and why, oh, why? Oh, Jack, I cry. If it happens to you today. Why, such a glorious guy.
Have a good one, folks.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.